Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
What did they do on a rainy night in Rio? A rinky pinky pink. What did they do when there is no starry sky? Oh, starry sky. Where did they go when...
Bugs Bunny was usually too busy making mayhem to make music. That was Carl Stalling's job. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, the great composers behind Warner Brothers cartoons. And later, details on Soundcheck's next event in the green space. Plus, New York musician Renny Lopez talks about fusing pop and boogaloo into what he calls electric Latin soul. His band will play live. But let's start with another installment of Animating Music, our look at the relationship between cartoons and tunes. And it's time to look at one of the most fruitful marriages of sound and image, the animated shorts known as Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies. Starting in the 1930s, Warner Brothers Studios produced some of the best-known characters in animation. Bugs Bunny, of course, Elmer Fudd, Daffy Duck, the list goes on. But they also commissioned some truly creative and twisted music. Kids who heard it were never the same. In a moment, we'll get a testimonial from former kid Jeff Spurgeon, who grew up to become a host at our classical sister station, WQXR. But first, George Doherty has spent more than 20 years up to his rabbit ears in Looney Tunes music. He is the conductor behind the long-running Bugs Bunny on Broadway concert series and the recent CD called Bugs Bunny at the Symphony. And he joins us on the line from San Francisco. George, welcome to Soundcheck.
I'm happy to be here. How are you all doing?
Very
Stop
well.
Shaking yet?
We've stopped shaking, yes.
Good.
Let me ask you, why was music so important to the Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies cartoons?
Well, I think you just said two of the most important words, tunes, T-U-N-E-S, and melodies. From the very beginning, these cartoons were branded as vehicles for music as well as animation. So the Looney Tunes never was spelled like T-O-O-N-S. So music was a huge part of it. Pictures had just gotten sound. Warner Brothers had this absolutely phenomenal, huge orchestra on the lot every day, and they were making fantastic usage of their orchestra and of music because it was, you know, sound pictures started at Warner Brothers with Al Jolson and the Jazz Singer, and they just could not get enough of music. And then they had this genius, Carl Stalling, there composing the music for their cartoons. And so it just was the most fruitful period of music and animation being joined together, and it was a totally brand new concept.
And so this was the same orchestra that would have done, you know, film scores,
Casablanca, the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was is that they would not schedule a proper scheduled recording session for the cartoons. They would wait till they had 25 minutes at the end of the Casablanca session, and then they would throw down a cartoon, and which, you know, gives it that sort of sense of terror that you hear in the original recordings. But it was a phenomenal period. Hollywood was the most fruitful and extraordinary place for symphony orchestras at that time, because every studio had this incredible symphony orchestra. Warner Brothers, one of the most incredible,
and they were all great musicians.
Cartoons, right? Tons of European musicians who had fled World War II,
right,
ended up in Hollywood, and it was just an unbelievably golden era.
Now, you mentioned Carl Stalling. He was. We mentioned this on Monday's show. He was briefly with Disney. He was Disney's first music director.
Very briefly.
And Disney had the Silly Symphonies. Were Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies, were they kind of riffing on the Silly Symphony idea?
No, because they took a whole different tact on that. Carl Stalling was born in northern Missouri, Lexington, Missouri, and he was the theater organist in his hometown silent movie theater by the time he was 12. So by the time he was 12 years old, he was getting this incredible experience at improvising scores to whatever movies came in through the week. Mm-hmm. And then he moved briefly to St. Louis, to the St. Louis Theater. And that's kind of a sweet story, because in 2 weeks, we're performing our Bugs Bunny at the Symphony concert, which is full of Carl Stalling, in the St. Louis Theater, except now it's called Powell Hall, and it is the home of the venerable St. Louis Symphony. It's their concert hall. And so St. Louis Symphony's concert hall, Powell Hall, was where Carl Stalling himself once presided over all of the movies from the theater organ.
Wow.
Then he went to Kansas City to the famous Isis Theater and was the music director and theater organist there. And he met this impoverished animator walking the streets with storyboards of a mouse under his arm, and it was Walt Disney. And it was actually, you know, Carl Stalling was actually sort of more well known and more well placed at that moment than Disney himself was.
Mm-hmm.
And together they talked about this new art form of being able to actually combine music and animation together with the advent of talking pictures. And the Silly Symphonies were more score based. The Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies from the very beginning had
more of a story.
Outside influences.
Yeah.
They had more story. The music told the story, but they had also popular songs from the very, very beginning. The Merry Melodies and Looney Tunes brand was to, in addition to being a funny cartoon, was to push the Warner Brothers music library. Disney didn't have a music library back in that era. Warner Brothers had a gigantic music library. They wanted those songs out there.
So Carl Stalling had a free hand in taking anything that he could find in the Warner Brothers catalog, and he could use that to his own devices.
Exactly, and the catalog was immense.
Yeah.
And so really these cartoons were sort of like the MTV of their era. It was the way of getting, you know, when we hear them today, the songs sound sort of, you know, retro. Well, they sound very retro, but that the song that you played as the intro, what do you get on a rainy night in Rio? That was a popular song when it came out. It was, you know, the cartoons were on the cutting edge of pop culture when they first came out.
But also high culture, right?
It was also high culture because he integrated, as we all know, the fantastic work of the great classical composers. Wagner, Rossini, Strauss. He loved von Suppé. He loved Smetana. He loved, you know, and it, so he created this vernacular where all of these things were seamlessly integrated together, and that's where his genius truly lies, I think, and is that the scores are completely seamless. They are like tone poems,
mm-hmm.
but they include, you know, popular songs. They include the work of Raymond Scott, who was a really funky composer.
Yeah, let's talk
period.
About him in a minute, but for the moment, let's give people a chance to hear what you're talking about, George. Carl Stalling took Rossini's famous opera, The Barber of Seville, and sort of recast it for the cartoon called The Rabbit of Seville.
How do? Welcome to my shop. Let me cut your mop. Let me shave your crop. Daintily, daintily. Hey, don't look so perplexed. Why must you be vexed? Can't you see you're next? Yes. You're next. You're so next. How about a nice close shave? Teach your whiskers to behave. Lots of lather, lots of soap. Please hold still, don't be a dope. Now we're ready for the scraping. There's no use to try escaping. Yell and scream and rant and rave. It's no use, you need a shave.
Ooh, ouch, ouch, ooh, ouch, ooh, ooh, ouch.
And you're nice and clean. Although your face looks like it might have gone through a machine.
So poor Elmer Fudd comes in for a shave, and instead the wascally wabbit has at him with a straight razor. From the 1949 cartoon Rabbit of Seville, Carl Stalling's arrangement of Rossini's music from the opera The Barber of Seville, George Doherty is on the line with us, a conductor who produced the recent CD called Bugs Bunny at the Symphony and conducts the concert series called Bugs Bunny on Broadway. George, let me read you a comment on our webpage today from Teresa in Brooklyn. She writes, Stalling's choices from the Warner Brothers catalog, for example, Oh, You Beautiful Doll for Bugs and Drag, and the classical world were so right and right on. How many music lovers of that generation owe their first taste of the classics to Stalling? I have to say, today's Soundcheck blog, I entitled it Music 101 with Professor B. Bunny, because I, too, got my first introduction to classical music through Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Absolutely. absolutely. I just read that blog, by the way. It was great. When we do these concerts, and we did the Bugs Bunny on Broadway concert for 20 years, and now we actually, with the Bugs Bunny at the Symphony concert in CD, is the second two decades of this. Concert after concert are totally sold out by these people who are singing those words. I mean, the amazing thing, though, is that when I am rehearsing the orchestra, a huge percentage of people in very, very famous orchestras could have sung those words with Bugs Bunny, Justin. That's how well we all know them from our childhood. And we all got our first exposure to classical music from these cartoons, and the brilliance of it was that it was so painless, mm-hmm. and it was just so much a part of our childhood. I know I was drawn to these cartoons simply by the sound of the music. When I was a little kid, I could find Looney Tunes by what they sounded like. In those days, the TV sound came on 2 minutes before the picture did, but I could find them because the music has this totally unique sound. People talk about the Warner Brothers sound of these cartoons as being something unique, and it is. Everything else, I think, sort of comes together in another genre of that era, but his music, Carl Stalling's music, and not to be diminished, his associate, Milt Franklin, who later on became the composer after Carl Stalling retired, both of them had this ability to have a total unique palette of orchestral colors. And
George, did they know what they were doing to us kids? Did they have any idea of the kind of subversive impact they were having?
No, I don't think they did, because first of all, when these cartoons were actually being created, they weren't making them for kids. They were making them for movie theaters, and they were making them for all audiences, but mostly for adult audiences, which I think is why the cartoons have this fantastic reach, and they're funny to us for our whole lives. We can see them as kids. They're very didactic. They're very colorful. They're very, very obviously funny. When you watch them as an adult, there are all these double entendres and mm-hmm. triple entendres. They were so busy making cartoons. I mean, Carl Stalling alone did over 600 scores. And Milt Franklin did another 600.
When we get to What's Opera Doc, this splendid riff on Wagner's Ring cycle, that's Milt Franklin at that point.
That is Milt Franklin, where you have to hand it to them, because they took all four operas of the Ring cycle plus another four Wagnerian operas, all handled. So eight Wagnerian operas. We calculate that the originals would have been about 65 hours long of the whole thing, and they present it to you in 7 minutes, which a lot of people think is actually the way to experience all of the Wagner opera repertoire. I'm not saying that, but...
All right, Wagner fans, address your emails to George Doherty at...
I conduct a lot of real Wagner, but I always have a slight smile on my face when I think of this. But the funny... Here's the funny thing about the Wagner fans. The Wagner fans are actually huge fans of What's Opera Doc. That's the other brilliance of these cartoons. People talked a lot about... When you were just talking about, were they... what was the subversive nature of them in terms of the music? It was handled so respectfully and gorgeously. The Rabbit of Seville that we just listened to, mm-hmm. they did as a Rossini-sized orchestra, exactly correct as Rossini would have written it. What's Opera Doc is a huge Wagnerian palette of instrumentation.
Backing up Mel Blanc as Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd.
And Arthur, it was Arthur Q. Bryant as Elmer. Poor Arthur Q. Bryant never got a screen credit once for all the years he did Elmer Fudd. But basically you had, Mel Blanc and Arthur Q. Bryant, two 55-year-old, 60-year-old men singing the gorgeous Wagnerian love duet to each other, "Oh, Brunhilde, you're so lovely," But the orchestration is, the themes are totally accurate.
George, that part that you're talking about is what we're actually going to hear. From the 1957 short, What's Opera Doc, inspired by Wagner's Ring trilogy, Elmer is chasing Bugs and then falls in love when Bugs disguises himself as the Valkyrie Brunhilde and rides in on a comically obese horse.
That was the Wabbit.
Thank you.
Cupid.
Up one Hilda, be my love.
What's Opera Doc, 1957 Bugs Bunny film that I loved as a kid, even though I didn't realize until right now, George Daugherty, just how many Wagner operas you're hearing in rapid succession in the course of even just that 60-second clip.
Absolutely, and something that you don't even recognize, the first 10 seconds was a bit of Rienzi, which is a totally obscure.
Fairly obscure, yeah.
But they included that, too. It was amazing.
So, George, you mentioned before Raymond Scott, who wrote some really eccentric small jazz combo music in the 30s and 40s, and whose music, when it sort of underwent a revival in the 80s and 90s, became linked to Bugs Bunny cartoons. Was that something that he would have been happy with? Was he an unwilling collaborator of Carl Stalling and Bugs Bunny and the gang?
Well, it was all happening in the 40s and 50s, so I'm sure he knew it was going on. And, you know, he wrote so many really quirky songs that you know, with fabulously quirky titles like Reckless Night on Board an Ocean Liner and stuff like that. Of course, the one that he wrote that is the most famous was Powerhouse, mm-hmm. which got used every time there was a conveyor belt or a mechanical piece of equipment going on. I think that people, with all due respect to Raymond Scott, sometimes give too much credit to Raymond Scott on his influence over Carl Stalling. Because Carl Stalling took the Raymond Scott music and he even took it to the next level, because it did start out as a small combo, and so the Carl Stalling evocation of that for the large symphony orchestra was really spectacular. But you can't, of course, doubt the genius of Raymond Scott's source material. But you know, it was just part of the palette that Carl Stalling used. But it was really. It was dramatically driven, and so often Carl Stalling loved to use the titles and the subject matter of the song in an appropriate way in the cartoon where the same thing was happening on the screen. It was really a genius. He was really doing musical collage before we even kind of knew what that term even meant.
And there were always these sort of in-jokes if you were a musical hipster back in the 40s and you knew what the title of the Raymond Scott piece, Dinner Music for a Pack of Hungry Cannibals, was. You might get a chuckle when you heard that in the cartoon. But here's the famous tune called Powerhouse from Carl Stalling through Raymond Scott. Carl Stalling Project, Carl Stalling's arrangement of Raymond Scott's Powerhouse, and we are looking at the great music behind the great cartoons of Merry Melodies and Looney Tunes, and we'll have more with conductor George Daugherty in just a moment. And we hope you'll join us in the green space on September 19th for a special soundcheck session with the Jayhawks. The alt-country icons are set to release their first album in 8 years. It's called Mockingbird Time, and it features the band's original songwriting duo, Gary Lurris and Mark Olson. the Jayhawks will play a special radio set in the green space to be taped for an upcoming episode of Soundcheck. You can be there for this evening event with the Jayhawks, Monday, September 19th at 6 p.m. Get your tickets at wnyc.org/thegreenspace. Our look at the music of Looney Tunes continues in a moment. Later, a live performance of Electric Latin Soul from New Yorker Renny Lopez and his band, later on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now in our look at the music behind Warner Brothers cartoons. It's today's installment in our week-long series, Animating Music, and I would like to direct your attention to our webpage, where you will find not only my blog, but a number of really interesting and entertaining posts from your fellow listeners on the website at wnyc.org/soundcheck. We've been talking about the composers who created the soundtracks behind Bugs Bunny and Wile E. Coyote and Elmer Fudd and the rest of the Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies gang. And we asked Jeff Spurgeon from our classical sister station, WQXR, to reflect on the music in those cartoons and especially what he learned about classical music from them.
I'm not sure when I noticed Carl Stalling's music. I mean, I'd always heard it watching the Looney Tunes cartoons on television. I appreciated the songs they sang.
The 5 o'clock whistle's done a blink. The whistle won't blow, and what do you think? My papa's still in the factory, 'cause he don't know what time it happens to be.
That was a popular song in the 1940s. The Glenn Miller Band, among others, recorded it long before Red Riding Hood sang it on her way to Grandma's house. But that's where I first heard it. And the parodies on popular songs.
Oh, carrots are divine. You get a dozen for a dime. It's magic. They fry, a song begins. They roast and I hear violins. It's magic.
Doris Day had the hit with Its Magic, but Bugs' version has wiped the original lyric away completely in my mind. Oh, the bowls of cereal I consumed on those Saturday mornings. But one day, watching some cartoon or other, I had a realization. Almost everything that happens on screen is happening in the music. This music, it's so smart, it's so funny. It refers to the characters on screen, it refers to songs I know. The Warner Brothers cartoons had a whole new appeal after that. They became much richer. They became a song search. What music would be referenced to highlight an event or a mood on screen? I've already mentioned the popular songs of the day that Stalling included constantly. They made the music for the cartoons very topical for audiences of all ages then, although a lot of those songs are obscure now. Classical music is a constant in Stalling scores, though, and in forms large and small. The large we'll deal with in a second, but the small are worth noting. For instance, The Roadrunner. In the cartoon Zoom and Board, Stalling's score here references Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries, the famous melody in just 5 notes, and then swings right into the Dance of the Comedians from Smetana's opera The Bartered Bride. Now, if you watch the cartoon, you'll miss almost all of this because there are sound effects dealing with Wile E. Coyote's unfortunate use of his Acme Ahab harpoon gun. So there are lots of sound effects that cover this music, but it's there. Stalling wrote it so carefully, even though the sound effects obscure it a bit. In a 1940 cartoon called Stage Fright, two puppies have wandered into a theater, chasing a bone inside a magician's hat that falls on the floor. The magician's baby chicken inside grumpily brings the bone out, slams it on the ground, and stalks back into the hat. See if you can recognize the music. That's a slight variation on Charles Gounod's Funeral March for a Marionette, used most famously 20 years later by Alfred Hitchcock for his TV show. You can listen to Stalling scores all day and find gems like that everywhere. But occasionally, classical music goes front and center. For instance, in an early cartoon called Pigs in a Polka, a classical sort of announcer even introduces things.
A familiar fairy tale entitled The Big Bad Wolf and a Three Little Pigs. Set to the delightful music of Johannes Brahms' Hungarian Dances.
I'm the little pig that built my house of straw.
And sure enough, the entire score is music by Johannes Brahms, varied by Stalling according to the mood of the action and flavored with those great sound effects. But that particular cartoon is far less well-known than Termite Terrace Celebrations of Liszt, Rossini, and Wagner. They're among the most famous cartoons in the whole Warner catalog. Bugs Bunny had a turn as a concert pianist in one short in which the usual concert plague turned up. And Bugs dealt with the disturbance by pulling a pistol out of his tuxedo. And then he sat down and played Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2 as best he could, plagued by a mouse. That cartoon, by the way, came out shortly after MGM released a Tom and Jerry cartoon with virtually the same plot. MGM got the Oscar for that one, too. One of Rossini's most performed operas today is The Barber of Seville, but I bet many, many more people know The Rabbit of Seville, the cartoon in which Bugs and Elmer Fudd square off on an opera stage set for the Barber opera itself. And when the two chase each other with ever larger weapons, Carl Stalling knew that a famous musical technique called the Rossini crescendo would perfectly reflect the growing arsenals. Classical music has seldom had a better commercial than that cartoon. And the final one, What's Opera, Doc?, is the capstone of classical cartoon iconography, a score that incorporates lots of famous Wagner melodies and motifs. It both parodies and pays tribute to some of the greatest music ever written and takes all the puffery out of it at the same time.
Kill the rabbit, kill the rabbit, kill the rabbit.
Kill the rabbit?
Jeff Spurgeon, still recovering from a childhood spent in front of the TV watching Bugs Bunny and the rest of the Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies, and George Daugherty, the conductor of Bugs Bunny at the Symphony and Bugs Bunny on Broadway. What'd you think of Jeff's little musical memoir?
I loved it. He hit the nail right on the head. I especially love the fact that he highlighted the little tiny things, like the one bar of Wagner that happens right in the middle of Zoom and Board. You know, I had to really smile because when we recorded the new recording of Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, we recorded it on the stage of the Sydney Opera House with the Sydney Symphony, who had just played the real Bartered Bride a few weeks before. And the fact that Carl Stalling's evocation of opera being played by in the world's most one of the world's most recognizable opera houses, I think must be really sweet for Carl Stalling. But he hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the little things as well as the big things that made Carl Stalling such a genius.
And Jeff Spurgeon, is it possible for this music to do this for yet another emerging generation of kids?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that the emotional power that music makes is going to be the same as long as we're human. It's going to be harder for new cultures to get those song references.
Yeah.
I mean, there are songs that pop up now in cartoons. I still don't know what they are because I wasn't alive in the 40s, and there were a lot of songs written in the 40s and 50s.
And some of the songs were old even in the 40s.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's just so much music to be mined. And the Merry Melodies and Looney Tunes that came out of the Warner Brothers studios. Jeff Spurgeon, conductor George Daugherty, thank you both for being with us on Soundcheck this afternoon.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Here is a little bit from that recent CD of Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, conducted by George Daugherty.
What's up, Doc? Who? Franz Liszt. Never heard of him. Wrong number.
And we continue our animating music series tomorrow with a look at animated rock bands from the Archies to Adult Swim. Still to come, Rennie Lopez and his band bring their electric Latin soul live to the Soundcheck studio.